Hello everyone, welcome to the Crunch Metrics webinar. There is one thing common among successful businesses, and that's outstanding customer experience. Businesses, especially digital disruptors, have time and again demonstrated this trait and have managed to well disrupt some of the most entrenched players in the industry. One such digital disruptor is GoIBibo, India's most loved travel company. The GoIBibo story is about how they changed the way India travels and how they helped millions explore the world. Today, we'll find out how Team GoIBibo uses real-time analytics to deliver a winning travel platform and an incredible travel experience. My name is Rohit Maheshwari. I'm your host, and I also head product management and strategy at Crunch Metrics, a SaaS platform that enables business opportunity discovery through anomaly detection, powered by AI and ML. And here is the agenda for today. So we are going to learn a bit about GoIBibo and what makes it India's largest and most loved travel company, the importance of real-time streaming data, and how industries and digital disruptors are organized around their data, which is so different from traditional industries. How do they use dynamic pricing using analytics, persuasion of customers, detect fraud, and of course, predict the road ahead, right? And to do this, I have two extremely eminent and interesting gentlemen with me. I have with me Ritesh Saralia, the VP of Engineering at GoIBibo. Ritesh has a penchant towards building systems from scratch with focus on reliability and scalability. I have known Ritesh for about a year now, and every conversation of mine I have loved having with him because he comes with so much of practical, pragmatic experience which he has been applying in this industry. He has, of course, I know, worked on large-scale tech platforms across travel and ad tech. Over the past few years, Ritesh has been engineering vertical lines of businesses such as hotels and trains and road, etc. He has also built horizontal solutions such as promotion engines and chatbots. I also have with me Bhaskar Chaudhary, who is the Vice President of Online Product at GoIBibo. Bhaskar, as I understand, is an expert in product and growth initiatives across e-commerce and online travel sectors. He conceptualized and brought to life many award-winning customer-centric products for GoIBibo. Ritesh and Bhaskar, welcome to our webinar, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Rohit. The pleasure is all ours.
Excellent.
We've heard a lot about your webinars that you actually conduct with respect to Crunch Metrics. I was looking forward to it.
Superb, Ritesh, and superb, Bhaskar. Thank you so much again. So, I mean, without waiting any further, I guess it's time we learn, from the two gentlemen. So, Ritesh, over to you. Help us understand what makes GoIBibo India's not only leading, and I insist, the most loved travel company, Ritesh.
Yes. GoIBibo started off from the stable of the IBibo Group. So IBibo Group was actually into multiple products, actually had multiple products within its line. The largest one at that point in time in 2005, 6 and all was a social network called IBibo.com. So along with that, we also, one of the other tech product that we actually had was something called Bixie, which was a vertical search engine. So typically a tech product on which you can actually plunk any line of business and you can create a search out of that. So we had something called Bixie Education, we had something called Bixie News, and same way we had something called Bixie Travel. So it was pretty much, Bixie Travel was pretty much a meta engine wherein someone can actually kind of put in their source and destination and get to see all of the flight options that are possible. And then you would go to the destination website to do your booking. And then it was so the model was business model was more about lead generation, and then we would basically get a cut off of that, right? So someone had this idea of basically probably instead of taking users, our customers, to the to a separate website for the fulfillment, why not actually fulfill the booking on our own platform itself? Right. So for that reason, so basically we started off, we actually integrated the APIs of Viya. Viya at that point in time was the number one B2B player in that space. So, and it was supposed to be like a 2 to 3 week project. And then with a few engineers, business guys and operations guys getting together, around 7 or 8 of them getting together to kind of get into this. I believe in 3 weeks or so, 3 to 4 weeks, the product was actually stitched. And that was actually the birth. And that's why, so everything was actually housed around ibibo.com. That's why the name of the product was also, or was also Go Ibibo. Right, so even the it was actually a subdomain of ibibo. It's like go.ibibo.com at the point in time. And then the product just clicked. Right? So it just went from strength to strength, and for over a period of time, we grew to be one of the number one players in the domestic travel space. Right, to the culmination of basically the mega merger with the McMyTrip Group 3 years ago, and with that essentially kind of makes the group the number one in the Southeast and South Asian space as such, right? So yeah, the intent always actually has been to be a super app, but specifically in the travel space. So we would invest in basically solving problems and creating, giving solutions to the, you know, to our end consumers or customers, but everything, anything and everything related to travel. Right? So our offerings, basically, that's why you would see that our offerings basically have range from allowing to booking flights to hotels to train to bus, cars, metro, and so on and so forth. Right? So yeah, so that is
phenomenal. Phenomenal, Ritesh. I mean, you mentioned you know, a bunch of engineers, 2 to 3 weeks, and you know, what sort of numbers you have managed to achieve, Ritesh. I mean, it's on the screen, some outstanding achievements, right? 90 plus million app downloads and 20 plus million MAUs. So fantastic, right? So Ritesh, I mean, while scale is one thing, like I started the topic, obviously, you know, scale is achieved because there is some differentiation, right? And obviously this differentiation is based on customer experience being one of the strongest pieces out there. So talk to us more about, how did you achieve, this sort of growth while driving business through innovation?
Okay, so there are typically five pillars that we actually live by, right? So selection, pricing, reliability, trust, personalization, or probably you can actually call it as contextualization in our ecosystem as such. And pretty much probably this would actually be true for any product commerce ecosystem as such, right? So when you would want to speak about selection in the, and I'll speak about in the travel industry as such, right? So selection would be with respect to, let's say, a variety of SKUs that can actually be as sold. So maybe whether it is a hotel or whether it is a flight, maybe a cheaper price but non-cancelable, having flexible cancellation policy but slightly higher priced, a hotel room with breakfast included and airport transfer also thrown along with it, and so on and so forth. So that's about the various types of selection, a varied amount of selection which is actually available to the customers. When it comes to pricing, the pricing is more about in terms of giving the best price to the consumer, right? So essentially across the gamut of all the other competitors which are actually available, making sure that the pricing is actually the best and the most optimal. When it comes to reliability, is about actually having a very reliable experience, right? Whether it comes to an unhindered booking experience, a great payment experience without actually having any falling through the cracks and so on. trust is more about a great, again, specifically with respect to post-sales as an experience, right? So trust basically is where you actually, it's not about just selling a product, but making sure that even after selling, you're actually are making sure that in the travel industry, let's say if it is hotels, it's not about just booking a hotel, but ensuring that basically you actually have a good, reliable experience in the hotel. You're actually check-in is actually smooth and so on and so forth. Right? And of course, contextualization would in our case, personalization or contextualization would be with respect to how contextual the product can actually be with respect to your search criteria. Let's say, for example, you're a family and you're trying to look for an accommodation having children, then you probably actually are surfaced with accommodations which are probably with something like homestays or so on. So there are varied amounts of customizations or contextualizations or personalizations that can actually be done, right? So typically for us, innovations or products that we actually build is usually around these five pillars that we actually live by. And real-time data specifically kind of helps us in catering to what a customer actually needs, or basically even say what a supplier wants to actually sell to these consumers, right? So because the customer would actually be generating a lot of data, similarly the supplier would actually be generating a lot of data. So real-time data in terms of the travel industry is actually very, very relevant. So when you talk about online travel, you are talking about a lot of large volumes of data, right? So as I was saying, from the consumer perspective, they actually, it's about the search data, it's about the transaction data, and on the supplier side, it's more about, say, for example, the various events with respect to availability and pricing that our partners, such as hotel partners, cab partners, the airlines, the bus operators actually generate. And because we are in the center, we are like a marketplace, and we are in the center of this two-sided network, right? Trying to marry the demand side, demand and the supply, right? For us to actually ingest all of this and kind of create solutions catering to both and marrying it in the best way, right? So is actually very paramount to us. And of course, along with this, you also have the competitive data that actually comes in, right? So which actually feeds into one of these other pillars, which was pricing that we actually were speaking about. So of course, yes. So to serve those five pillars that we actually have, data and consuming this data in real time to kind of cater to both the supply, the needs of the supply and the needs of the demand side of the ecosystem is very paramount. And we actually use, we create a lot of streamlined data, a lot of data sets and a lot of what we call data pipelines to kind of ingest all of this data and heuristically apply various AI and algorithms on top to kind of make sure that we kind of give the best experience to our consumers.
Right? That's sure. I mean, I totally agree, right, Ritesh? I see data analytics essentially in three planes, right? So one is cold data analytics, which is traditionally used for strategic decision making. So you have data which is collected over a few months or an year, over a couple of seasons, and then you use it to forecast what next, etc., etc., right? Which is very standard, typically used by large BI systems and you know, the traditional way. Another is warm data analytics, where it is a little more you know, day-to-day kind of decisions, right? Which again, rules, thresholds, BI sort of systems are pretty adept at delivering sort of the required intelligence, like you mentioned, to build a winning product. But then what is very interesting of late with companies like yours, as you pointed out, is the amount of humongous amount of real-time data that you're picking up, which eventually lends to what I categorize as hot data analytics, or, you know, where the use cases are far more operational, the decisions required are here and now. So you spoke about pricing, reliability, customer experience, trust. I mean, I loved your narration on the five pillar strategy of GoIBibo. So it is obvious and love the narrative, the way you explained it, right? How you leverage real-time data analytics to deliver a winning product. So thanks so much for walking us through this, Ritesh. So my next question, and I cede stage to Bhaskar. If Bhaskar can talk about some of the specific use cases of real-time analytics, Bhaskar, you have been driving within the GoIBibo framework, Bhaskar.
Sure, Rohit. Hi, everyone. So Ritesh pretty much captured the pillars that we basically rely on to give a good user experience. But if you look at travel in general, right? Travel at our scale is a very, very highly data-driven business. When you have 20 million MEUs, and at a DAU level, it will be easily 1 million plus. It leads to a lot of use cases, and you have to basically solve these to the T. Some of the very important ones are mostly in the area of forecasting and classification. You can do a very good job of forecast flight fares and hotel prices purely because of the scale that we are at. You need tons of data to do forecasting. And thankfully, we are in a place where we can take a stab at that. Similarly, at our scale, the tolerance that users have very high expectation from us. And you have to ensure that you do justice. And any deviations that you see, whether it is social media or any other channel, it's important to get access to that and then react to that. So again, these sort of anomalies help you drive your businesses towards the pillars that Ritesh mentioned. Then pricing is a very important part. So like pricing selection, Ritesh mentioned. So pricing again is a factor that is one of the key, you can say, attractions as far as users are concerned. So pricing has to be right, pricing has to be just. And with the data that we have at our disposal, you can actually do a lot of stuff with that. So dynamic pricing we'll be covering in detail going forward. Similarly, there is a concept of persuasion. Think of it like a communication. Could be a positive reinforcement, could be a negative reinforcement. The idea here is that you give the right information to the user that helps him or her make the right decision. So there is a lot of nuances to that. We'll be covering that too. And then there is this area of say fraud management. Fraud again, like you see, at our scale, it has multiple nuances to that. It could be say payment-driven fraud. It could be promotional fraud. It could be an abuse of say a campaign that we are running. So that is again a very interesting area to look at when you are looking at harnessing data for real-time analytics. So we'll be covering the last three in detail as we go ahead.
Superb, right? Excited to hear you out. So let me try to sort of summarize what you're saying. You're saying one, you are built around data, right? The diversity and the richness and the volume of data which you're able to really analyze helps you drive the use cases that you are listing here, and these are critical to the success of your business and the five pillar strategy. So makes sense.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bhaskar. All eager to hear you on pricing for revenue management.
Sure. So before we get into the dynamic pricing part, if you look at the real life example, like take travel sector and take a typical player in the say hospitality industry. So you will see some sort of dynamic pricing playing out. Take a typical hotel, say in Goa. If you're going to Goa in December, probably the hotel will be 10K. You go to the same property in April or May, it will be 6K. You go in monsoon, it will be even lesser than that. So depending on what is the capacity and competency, so there is some sort of dynamic pricing playing out. And the same thing happens in multiple other sectors. It is just about what is your competency or computation level to take the right decisioning. Now look at the data that we generate. So, and you can look at any area for that matter. I'll specifically be focusing on hospitality or hotels and alternate accommodation here. So with a platform which has more than a lakh plus listings and which has, as I said, almost like a million plus users coming daily, the amount of data that it generates, it helps you define right boundaries as far as demand marrying supply is concerned. And then demand has its own nuances, supply has its own nuances. But ultimately what happens is that the data that is being generated. If you harness it, you can do a lot of stuff with that. You can do clusters. And now these each clusters will have their own behavioral, you can say, elements. And probably you can also look at the trend that is being generated from there. What it allows you to do is to basically create this sweet spot where demand marries supply the right way. So probably when you're doing it manually, your ability to take decision will be, say, once or twice or thrice in a day. When you do it with right discipline of data, you can probably take more than, say, 10,000, 20,000 decisions depending on what is happening or what sort of data you have. Not only that, when you look at a platform, look at any technology platform, it is not only about organic demand and supply. There are too many factors. There is competitive data being set up. As far as hospitality industry is concerned, we not only have competition, but we also have the organic business. So the whole way how suppliers price their product. Now, the type of signal that you will have, for example, take the case of Goa, right? A property owner sitting there only has visibility as to what is happening to his property or say what is happening in his location. When we sit here, we know what is happening to Goa. Not only from Goa perspective, we know what is exactly who are going to Goa. What is the trend of, say, people going from Bangalore to Goa versus, say, people going from Delhi to Goa, and then accordingly give a very good, you can say, futuristic signal. So not only we make our platform intelligent, we also make our suppliers more optimized. Now, depending on the volume or depending on the demand that you see on the funnel, you can decide on the pricing. So these sort of elements really, really help you define pricing, and this is what we call data driven. You look at supply, you look at demand, you look at the type of demand. Probably this is the best time if you look at the current demand, right? What we are seeing trend is that the affordability part, right? If people travel now, post the post COVID part, they will be willing to spend probably say 10 to 20% more if they are guaranteed right safety and hygiene. So trends keep changing. Now, if you price the old way, probably you might not win. You might have to look at a lot of other capabilities. So now it's not only demand and supply, it is also about quality of supply marrying the right sort of demand. Then there is a competitive trend. Competitive trend can come into multiple, they have again multiple facets to them. So Goa is a very good example. Probably you will see Goa growing as far as on the domestic tourism part is concerned. Probably international will take some time. So the pricing has to factor in these sort of complexities. So those corrections is again something that only can be generated when you have right harnessing of data. Similarly, you might have different target audience. Probably someone who is coming from, say, Bangalore to Goa will have very different requirement, say, versus someone coming from, say, Pune to Goa or, say, Delhi to Goa. So you can have very nice classifications set for your target audience and define the pricing accordingly. The last, because it is a revenue management piece, pricing is all about revenue management. So you have a lot of stakeholders there. So you will have your business folks, you will have your supply stakeholders. So it is very important to give them the performance or the consequences of the actions that are being taken. To give you an example, take the old way of doing the pricing, right? You always go and at a hard level do a hard set of say 10K in December. You might not get result. So it's very important how quickly you basically get result of your decision making. So that is only possible when you not only do a very disciplined job at looking at data aggregation, but you also look at success factors, success or failures that is happening on that part. So that's what dynamic pricing is all about. It's done the right way. So there's only, you can do so many things wrong there, but probably you have to look at very, very disciplined approach of, in my experience for the lot of projects that I've worked at, this is one project if done right, gives you amazing, amazing rewards.
Fascinating. I mean, you know, you spoke about the multiple variables, right? Spoke about, you know, correlation, right? Where does the person travel from, etc., etc. You spoke about demand supply. You spoke about topical, right? I mean, currently a situation has emerged where safety has become paramount, etc. It's simply mind-boggling what a platform which is designed effectively can do as compared to just looking at how many people have come and then trying to do a pricing. Absolutely and totally aligned with you, Bhaskar. You also spoke about persuasion, right? And how do you do user engagement through persuasion? Probably if you can walk us through some thoughts on how personalization, how persuasion, how you make it contextual, and how does it really help you drive a certain customer behavior?
Sure. So let's look at, like I said, right? Persuasion is simple, intelligent communication. So idea here is that you give information to the users which can be utilized for them to do a quicker decision making. Now, in internet commerce, it's a known thing that contextually relevant messages lead to faster and more informed decision making. Any transactional funnel is basically looking at these sort of aspects where you give information to user that helps him move at a deeper part of the funnel. So at Guayabibo, what we did was that we increased our focus on persuasion, visibility, contextualization of funnels, including offer discoverability. So typically what we do is that we look at tons of data and then we see the aspects that are of interest. Now take a hotel. Let's say a couple who want to spend some quality time want to go to that particular property. The information beyond say price and selection that they are looking at will be very different from say a family who is going to the same property. Probably the most important thing that a couple would be looking at is hassle-free check-in. Again, India has we are a growing setup and there are still some taboos, and this is one of the very important segments, and you'll be surprised at how big this particular segment is. So this information of hassle-free check-in is what a couple would be looking at. For the same property, a family would be looking at something like a kid stays free or the choice of amenities. Probably a family would be looking at a pool, probably looking at kid-friendly amenities. That age of your kid also leads to would lead to your requirements changing. If you're traveling with an infant, you would want to stay at location which is not very secluded. So these sort of aspects, bringing them out. First of all, identifying these aspects require a lot of pattern analysis. You need tons of data to even build hypothesis matter. And then building out these stories, depending on what input that a customer is, what will give these persuasion. And like I was talking about safety and hygiene, if you go to our funnel currently, you will see the whole safety and hygiene aspect has been taken to a very different level, where depending on the type of property you are looking at, you will see message changing. You can try out even these searches. So probably if you are searching for Goa versus if you are searching for Baga versus if you are searching for a particular location, say you are in probably Bangalore and you are looking at a business point of interest. So the messaging or the stuff that you see on funnel has to adapt itself to what the customer is looking at. So that is what we call persuasion. And it's important when a property is excellent, have as many positive reinforcement. At the same time, if there are things that a customer should be knowing on a particular property, you look at those aspects as well. Now, easier said than done, you not only need organic high volume of data, you need a very responsive user community to even achieve this part. And that is what we have achieved. And it has taken us almost like an year to get this whole story going. But with data-driven insights, what we have been able to do is have a very, very contextual app asset personalized to different user segments. And it helps if you see the whole funnel playing out, what we had a couple of years back and what we have now. It's very, we can claim that at least there are multiple segments that this funnel can get to purely because of the power of persuasions that we have.
Sure. I mean, again, quite fascinating, you know. You definitely spoke about the demographic of the person who has come to the hotel and then deciding what to present, what to show and what to offer, because you are able to identify what a certain demographic actually is looking for. And this, I'm sure, is the moat that your business has managed to build after learning over the year. So this is something which doesn't happen overnight. So there is obviously intuition you begin with. You have an hypothesis, an intuition, then you start looking at data, and over a period of time this becomes a formidable moat. So yeah, very, very fascinating. I think we'll move to the next topic, which was, you know, related to fraud. And one of the pillars of your business strategy is credibility and trust, right? So to me, Fraud is closely related in digital businesses. Trust is becoming extremely important. So it is both a trust a business places in its consumer, consumer places in business. It's a two-way relationship. Similarly, on the supply side, the trust you place on your suppliers, right? So it is an ecosystem of supplier, yourself, and your consumers, and how do you build this digital trust? In fact, it was very interesting. Last year at the World Economic Forum, trust was one of the most important pillars identified, which leaders, strategists, CEOs will be focusing on in the coming years, right? And pandemic obviously has served as a point of inflection. More and more things have moved online, and trust deficit can really hurt. So, I mean, it would be very, very nice to hear from you, Bhaskar. How do you handle online fraud? Therefore, are able to build the right sort of trusted ecosystem around yourself.
So fraud detection and our initiatives in this area, it has had a pretty interesting journey. So one thing what you realize on fraud is that you never stop an abuse or a fraud permanently. You just stop it temporarily. And then it comes in a different form and shape as you go ahead. And as you innovate more, as you see disruptions all across you, they also bring with them these unnecessary or evils of sort. A best example would be, I'll start with UPI, right? UK, probably if you name the top three disruptions as far as payments are seen this decade, worldwide, UPI probably easily would be at the top, if top or basically top two. Now, the convenience that it has brought leads to a lot of, user flows where there are chances of opportunities for people who are very, very savvy to basically rob off people who are not very, very savvy, but still find this experience worth looking at. And so it becomes very important for platform. So now there is no straightforward way. So you have to look at patterns again. You have to look at anomalies to see things that way. So here we have done a lot of work around this part effectively. So there are multiple types of fraud, like I said. There would be demand side fraud, there would be supply side fraud, there could be demand and supply coming together to do an abuse. Then there are these all sorts of things that you see on payments. So if you have right data streams, if you are able to harness right your click stream in a disciplined manner, these use cases are easy to solve. Now, you can in fact build networks, you can build anomaly setups, which will tell you. So one is detection, other is prevention. So when you start, early stage, you can only do detection, but if you have very, very smart streams which can react, you can even prevent them. So we have these capabilities. Some of them are in-house, some of them are again partner enabled, but these do help. At its peak, if done the right way, probably you will see a top line, or rather a top line impact or a bottom line impact of at least 5-7% if done the right way. So that is the scope that online fraud gives you. And in fact, you have seen one of our success stories, which is GoCash, right? Now, GoCash and the pricing that we offer is so attractive. And that is one of our pillars that Ritesh also mentioned. Now, with this particular attractive part attracts a lot of unwanted attention also. And you need to have very important, very critical boundaries that will help you safeguard these propositions. You want to give these attractive proposition, but they have to be taken up by your customers and not by unscrupulous segment that will take the majority of these, and at the same time will not give any platform benefits to you. So these sort of use cases always help us. So we have capabilities on anomaly side, we have capabilities on network side. In fact, on payment side, again, we have, of course, we work with multiple partners. Now we are venturing out on the international side of things. So there the whole story of fraud takes a different shape. So you have to be attentive to that, because we have started accepting international payments. There will be international audience that we would be looking at. So as you scale, this challenge just grows bigger. You only stop it temporarily. Now, if you have the right discipline, if you have the right stream, I keep reiterating that, it's the job is a little easier than say lack of it.
Sure. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, you and I liked the way you started this, right? You only temporarily stop it because the fraudsters are already thinking the next move. Yeah. And I have seen organized crime, organized fraud leverage very, very sophisticated data analytics themselves. They are happy and, looking at AI algorithms themselves to try and outwit you, to understand what you are doing, to detect them so that then they can move the needle further. And it's important that you always keep an eye on this. Yeah, and you're right. If you are not doing enough, obviously the overall business platform benefits will already be gone. So yeah, so that was really fascinating, Bhaskar. So from my perspective, the COVID crisis has been a moment of reckoning for most businesses, a point of inflection for businesses, communities and societies at large, people at large. Consumer behavior is changing very, very rapidly. We are seeing adoption of digital in everything we do. So that is definitely what we are seeing. So from your insights, what is your prediction for the travel industry in the coming days? What do you think, how will travel industry continue to get smarter, technology enabled, AI enabled? Do you have any recommendations for our audience members and business owners who want to leverage data, analytics, AI in the current scenario, Ritesh? Over to you.
Yes, see, the current times are challenging, right? And the sector is definitely under pressure, right? So so even the consumer preferences are actually changing. So there is actually a need, there is a very deep need to understand and adapt to the newer, the newer dynamics that are actually coming in place, right? Mm-hmm. And since because we are the incumbents, a lot of the others in the sector are kind of probably looking up to us to kind of lead in this space, to figure out as to, okay, what are we doing, and probably what we are doing is probably right for the sector as such, right? So in this case, definitely data and algorithms and AI is going to continue to help us understand these dynamics better. And we'll try and help us basically build innovative solutions and interventions where it was actually needed, right? So in the newer paradigm, definitely safety becomes paramount. Maybe routing and matching algorithms actually have to change to cater to that. Consumer preferences will change with the safety guidelines and social distancing norms coming into the picture. So that effectively means that we have to kind of augment and adapt ourselves and our products to kind of make sure that we actually build the right interventions and products, and through technology solve those problems. So I definitely believe that, so for example, AI will actually have a greater role to play. Let's say, for example, in terms of check-ins. Check-ins are probably going to be more and more contactless in nature, whether it's within airports or whether it's within hotels itself. So a lot of facial recognition algorithms will actually be utilized and used, and they would actually definitely get better and better. Because of the dynamic changing of the consumer requirements, it effectively means that the contextualization of whether it's offers or pricing or selection that we actually create will probably actually have to be tailor-made towards the newer expectations of the consumers. And of course, when we are speaking about the consumers, we definitely, because we are a two-sided network, we cannot actually forget even about the supply side of the ecosystem as such, right? So of course, they will actually have different kind of demands, they'll actually have different kind of probably value propositions that they actually will have. So these data and events that actually keep coming in, we have to try and make sure that we can actually marry the value propositions in real time to the consumer requirements as such. So I believe that is what is probably going to actually be the newer paradigm, and it's actually going to be a different challenge, because probably a lot of things that we actually built over a period of time actually probably might have to be rethought and reworked to make sure that the demand and supply, there's actually like a sweet spot of basically marriage over there.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting. You spoke about the road ahead and what needs to happen. Obviously, our audiences who are also very keen to hear your points of views on what best practices and tips do you have, which you're happy to share with some of our audiences who might come from your industry, your competitors, or from varied industries. So any learning tips for our audience, Ritesh?
Right. So I believe irrespective of whatever the scale of any product or any company that is, right? So I believe, and this is purely from my experience and what I'm actually speaking. So I believe that probably there are a few, what you call, pillars, which is if you can actually set up, will actually hold you in good stead through the course of time as the organization also grows. So one is basically probably it's worthwhile to invest in a proper data pipeline. Right. So basically build a proper data pipeline so that you can actually ingest all of the different events and streams of data that can actually come into your ecosystem. Right. So these clicks and invest in basically building, understanding what your consumers are actually doing. Consumers in a sense, both sides, right? Whether if you're actually like a network like us, a two-sided network like us, you basically have click streams to basically understand your consumers better. You actually have supply side events which are actually coming in and these get consumed better. And then basically you actually build an intersection so that you can actually build the right products to actually marry these two ecosystems. So definitely a data pipeline, definitely a mechanism of basically taking and consuming data and housing it within yourself. The third I would like to is probably a very underrated practice is what I would probably say is that you actually have to be razor sharp in terms of monitoring and detecting how good your performance metrics are. Right? So invest in basically either invest in a tool or some other mechanics of basically how you can actually monitor how good your APIs are, because we are actually now probably a lot of services will actually to serve a product or to serve a feature, there are multiple services which come and work together to give a beautiful consumer experience. So invest in basically building a tool which can actually kind of articulate how good your performance metrics of your backend system, backend and frontend systems are, right? And then basically try and figure out, and this is probably an expectation I would actually have probably in the future, that basically if you could actually build a system which can actually correlate your ops metrics with respect to your business metrics as such. Let's say, for example, for whatever reasons, let's say you're in the case of hotels, the room nights are actually going down. But then if you are able to correlate specifically in terms of some service, let's say one of the payment providers is actually is degrading. So it allows an ecosystem to actually be more reactive. To be more proactive rather than reactive in nature, right?
More responsive, yeah, totally. Right.
To be in nature. So I would investing in these systems, irrespective of the scale, will actually help hold an organization good stead when they actually are looking at scale. So you don't actually necessarily have to rewire and rework a lot of your systems and all that. Right? So that's what I would probably say, probably a couple of nuggets of wisdom I would probably give to people who would be investing.
It has been a fascinating conversation, gentlemen. Thank you so much, Ritesh and Bhaskar, for sharing your insights on how you do it differently at GoIBibo. That data centricity that you spoke about, keeping the five pillar strategy in mind, and how you leverage insights, information, data, real-time analytics to deliver an award-winning, India's most loved travel experience, right, to Indians. I mean, I'm sure millions of Indians are thankful, millions of your hotel partners or supply-side partners are thankful for the fascinating work that you guys have done. You're truly an inspiration. I really do look forward to engaging in more such conversations in future with you. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks once again.
Likewise, Rohit. And thank you for hosting us. It's been a pleasure. I've totally loved the interactions we actually had.
Pleasure has all been mine, gentlemen. Oscar, go ahead.
Thanks, Rohit. So, indeed, the last part that Ritesh mentioned, so it's pure gold as far as our the next step of data is concerned. And it was indeed pretty healthy discussion that way. So, loved it.
Sure. Thanks, Bhaskar. And to the audiences, if you have any more questions around how to do data analytics in real time, better, differently, do not hesitate to reach us out at info@crunchmetrics.ai. Thank you so much for tuning in and watching the two gentlemen and learning from them. Thanks again. All the best to you guys.